Welcome to the Seahawks Forever podcast, in-depth analysis on everything Seahawks. And now, here's your host, Dan Vians.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the show, Tuesday Night Live, I guess. Here on Seahawks Forever. Just thought it was time to hop on and get some of your comments, some of your questions, some of your feedback, some of your input now that we are fully into the offseason, right? Kind of the slow time of the year, although we do have the schedule release coming up any day now. Big mystery on the part of the NFL to keep that from us, but should be, there's some speculation it might be Thursday and then we'll get some sort of announcement tomorrow. It's interesting how that kind of has evolved over the years. But anyway, before I get off on that tangent, just a couple of things. Let me just kind of go over some things that I thought we could cover today. If I can get this window open. First of all, some thoughts about rookie minicamp, some of the things I've read and heard that have gone on. Programming note, Corbin Smith will be joining me tomorrow. He got to be on the ground and watch rookie minicamp. So we'll be getting his thoughts tomorrow. Always look forward to visiting with Corbin. I will show you what I think the updated depth chart looks like and sort of a hint at what I think the 53-man roster will look like. I'll be doing that show later this week as well. We'll talk about the schedule release, look at some of the opponents and kind of some ideas of what we might like to see as far as how the schedule plays out. We can talk about some sleepers to make the roster, maybe some of the undrafted free agents. You know, by now, with, you know, the advent of, you know, all the tools that we have at our disposal, y'all can go look at prospects that the Seahawks sign, even the undrafted ones that you're not as familiar with. And it's kind of funny. I was looking at one today, and we'll get to this young man in just a moment, but found some highlights. Some of these guys, it's harder to find tape on them than others. I mean, I subscribe to a database where I get all 22 tape on draft prospects, and many of the undrafted free agents, they're not even on there. But if you go on YouTube, you can find somebody somewhere has usually put tape together on these players, even the smaller school ones, and found tape of this one individual. And you go to the comments and it's all Seahawk fans like, hey, good. This guy looks good. And people start to get excited about those players that they weren't aware of until now. And then we'll talk about something that I was chatting with Eric Briggs about, my buddy. You've seen him on the show before. Earlier today, you know how my brain works, right? If you've watched this show for any length of time, you know that, you know, the wheels are always turning. And then I'm not afraid to ask, you know, harder questions than some people are willing to consider, that the older I get, that in fact, I was just talking about this idea with a member of the Seahawks organization on Saturday night, someone who's been at the organization for 20 years. And I won't mention a name or who this person is or what they do, other than they work very closely with the players. And they've been in that building for 20 years, which means they've been through 4 head coaches, right? Hired during the Holmgren era, then the 1 year of Mora, Carroll, now Mike McDonald. And this person said, look, it's everybody revered Coach Carroll, but it's, you know, the change has been a positive one. Almost to a person, the attitude at VMAC was, it was time for a change. That some of the staff and players even were kind of disconnected. And just the message had gotten lost. It wasn't landing anymore. And the reason I bring up that point is because this person and I also had a conversation about how I came to see it that way. You heard me say it on the show halfway through the season last year. And that my thought process has changed. That, you know, my passion for the team and the sport hasn't changed. But the way that I see it has. That my head and my heart are much more balanced than it used to be. Which is why I try to be understanding when people are 80% heart and 20% head. They're the ones that don't want us to get rid of any existing players, no matter what, no matter salary cap ramifications or whether they're declining skills or any of those things, just because they're in love with the name on the back of the jersey. I get that. because I used to be that way too. My head now has crept up over the years to become, I think, the boss of the two. And one way that I like to look at the game now, and it's one of the things I enjoy about this medium, is I can put it out there and get discussion, is by just asking the hard question. That's the first step. And so I have kind of an extreme idea about the quarterback position that I'm going to throw at you a little bit later in this show. And then, we can get into whatever you want to get into. You can hit me up no matter where you're seeing this on Twitter, my Facebook, Twitch. I think I even put it on tonight. And then, of course, through the YouTube channel. Unfortunately, if you comment through the YouTube channel, I can read your comment, but I can't put it on the screen for some reason. It's just the interface between my streaming software won't allow me to do that. But you can get your comments in. I see a couple of you already have. Misfit 74, Charles Cross, long-term outlook. Good. I'll touch on that in just a moment. But those are the things I want to touch on. And even, I'd love to get your thoughts on the Tom Brady roast last night. It's been a big topic of conversation. I've watched the first hour of it late last night or early this morning, actually. I think I got up through the Nikki Glaser segment. Still a bunch to watch. And I have some thoughts on that as well. So if you guys want to toss that around, we can as well. But first, I want to give some shout outs to start off with. First of all, Curtis Allen of the Seahawks Draft Blog, who I had on a couple of weeks ago, wanted to say hello and say thank you to him. Just a great resource. Had him on to talk about the salary cap. He's so good with those numbers and really understands it inside and out. And if you recall, if you caught the show where I had him on before the draft, he was actually on vacation and he was talking to me from Hawaii. I think he was in Maui, actually. And he sent me some Hawaiian coffee today. So, as much as, I have the buy me a coffee link always in the description as a way you can support me in the show, he actually sent me coffee. So very, very cool. Appreciate that, Curtis. And then here, let me put this up. Let's go here and take these banners away. Sorry about that. So these are on the virtual Buy Me a Coffee site. Last 90 days, top three supporters. Just want to say thanks. Give a shout out to Dave and Josh and George for all your support. Really consistent in the comments and the kind words and all of that as well. So big shout out to you guys there. We'll take that away, and then I'm going to queue up the depth chart so that we're ready to go on that. It's one of the things I like about live is I don't feel as tied to the clock, right? And things don't have to be perfect and seamless. So let me just give me one second here while I do this and get this ready. And just go with there we go. We'll put that up. Let's get into this first, because this kind of ties into, the initial, and I can hit Misfit 74's question here as well. And I think it really ties into just kind of recapping things that we heard about rookie minicamp, right? I mean, some of the images we saw, what was the first impression, right? Byron Murphy, just looking like a stud. Just his build, I tweeted it out, just his frame and the way he's built, like, the days of the 340-pound nose tackle might be gone. We'll still probably see a bunch in the 320-pound range, but getting after the quarterback is so important in today's game that I think teams are going to look for players more like Murphy, and I think players are going to be built more like Murphy moving forward, where the athleticism is important. But in that package, he packs the game of a 6'3", 330-pound player. When you watch the tape, you see him taking on double teams and dropping his anchor. And this is something I can't wait for you guys to see. If you haven't seen it yet, I always tell people, like, go find on YouTube. I think you can find the all 22 or at least cut-ups of every play from the Alabama-Texas game last year. And Alabama is always loaded on the offensive line, right? They always have a bunch of 4- and 5-star guys up there and guys that are drafted. And what he does to drop his anchor and take on blocks and double teams is so remarkable. And I had a discussion with someone, you know, a couple months ago when I hopped on the Murphy train, and he became the guy that throughout the offseason was consistently my favorite choice to be picked at 16 if they stayed there. And he said, well, you know, why are we going to draft a guy without stats? And I was like, man, that's not how defensive linemen work initially, you know, or typically. And, you know, the Alabama game, he used as an example of why he didn't like Murphy. And that's where we disagreed to disagree, because I saw him affecting every single play by occupying blockers. And if not making the play himself, allowing others to make it, like taking on double teams and still pursuing the play. I cannot wait to see. I'm as excited about him as I've been excited about any draft pick in the last 10 years. Even Devin Witherspoon last year, who I was really, really jacked about. Like, I think we may have gotten ourselves an all pro this year. And I can't wait to see what he does. And it looked like from all accounts at rookie minicamp that he displayed those skills. And, you know, I like what Mike McDonald had to say, though, about how, hey, you know, tried to keep him a little humble. He's got to get in shape. You know, he gave him an out. He said, look, this offseason, the whole process through the draft and everything, it's tough to be consistent with your workouts, but we're going to get him there. Cannot wait to see what this kid does. So let's start at the bottom and we'll just kind of go through the defense, right? And then, Misfit, I'll get to your question here when we get back to the top in the offense. Sorry, I'm just thrown off here by looking at... that's crazy. I was just looking at the delay between my streaming software and what's happening on YouTube. Seems to be extreme tonight. So my apologies for that. But on defense, imagine a year ago at this time, the biggest concern was the defensive line. They had gotten rid of everybody on the defensive front, let them all go. And we spent 2 months listening to him talk about how they'd like to bring them all back. Remember, Pete kept talking about how he'd like to bring Puna back and Al Woods. And then one by one, those guys got snapped up. And even late in the process, like, yeah, we're open to bringing Shelby Harris back. And then he signed with the Browns later on. And all those guys departed, every single one of them, except for, you know, Miles Adams. And then they added Draymond Jones on the first day of free agency, right? That was the big swing. And then they added Jaron Reed, who we weren't sure about because he was coming off a pretty bad year in Green Bay by most accounts. And then we were all freaking out after the first 2 days of the draft because they still hadn't addressed it. Then they take Cam Young in the fourth round and Mike Morris in the fifth round. And then late in the offseason, they signed Mario Edwards. And that was like it. I mean, you know, you go back and look at shows at the beginning of last year, heading into training camp, we were still really concerned about the defensive line. And then they add Leonard Williams at the deadline. And Jaron Reed turns out to be the guy that we remember and not the guy that was in Green Bay. And he was really good. But Draymond Jones didn't live up to our expectations. But still, you know, Mike Morris misses the season. Cam Young barely plays. But now look at it, right? And in green here, just to show you kind of how I have this working. And let me take this banner away too because it's covering up Roe Torrance. Can't do that. Players in green are players that I expect to start. Players in light gray are players that I think are going to make the roster, right? Not finalized yet. I'll do a show later this week on a projected 53-man. But and then the numbers that you see next to the position there is the numbers that they started last season with on the initial 53-man roster. And those can be a little fluid, right? So, you know, 4 defensive tackles, 3 defensive ends. We don't know 100% the scheme that Mike McDonald's going to run, do we? And so we're not sure about that. But, you know, between those positions, let's say 7. So Jaron Reed, Leonard Williams, Draymond Jones, some combination of them. Those are probably your starters. Then you have the veteran Jonathan Hankins, Byron Murphy, obviously. And then I think, Young and Morris are both locks to make the roster. I'm really excited to see what Mike Morris can do. A guy that's 6'6", 300 and whatever pounds. We don't know what he weighs this offseason. Maybe Mike McDonald has a little different idea for him, wants him to get back down to 285 that he played at Michigan, 280, 285. Or maybe he wants him to stay at 300, 305, be a guy that can play inside or out. But with that familiarity that McDonald has, I can't wait to see what he does with a guy, because he's the most unique guy on the roster physically, right? And so I think we're pretty clear starting at that position group. That's your seven, right? I mean, Miles Adams is going to have a hard time making this roster. Then the outside linebackers, the edge guys, you know, Nwosu, Mafe, Hall, Taylor. And when I started this process, I thought there's a good chance Daryl Taylor doesn't make this team. Like, he doesn't have the guaranteed money this year. They adjusted his contract. They could cut him and save just about his entire salary. But then reminding myself that last year they started with five edge guys. I think Nelson Caesar, from what I see on tape, has a really good chance to make this roster. I see the bull rush. I see the ability to bend. I see speed to power. I see some versatility. They even played him an off-ball linebacker sometimes, which is kind of odd, but interesting because we know McDonald likes to move guys around and be deceptive, right? And so at this point, I've got him being one of those sleepers. Inside linebacker, you know, they go out and get Terrell Dodson, Jerome Baker. Those guys are locks. Tyrese Knight, the fourth round pick. And then it's going to be an interesting battle to be that fourth inside linebacker. I think the preseason is going to be really interesting at that position. You know, still to this day, my most viewed video was the one about the Seahawks poaching Drake Thomas from the Raiders practice squad at the end of last year's preseason. And I really liked what I saw on tape there, but I think it's going to be an uphill battle for him to make the team. It's probably a pretty easy move to get him on the practice squad. But I just think physically he and Dodson are kind of similar, shorter, smaller Mikes. So I think there's some redundancy there that probably makes it a little tough for him. But Patrick O'Connell is a guy that, you know, we remember how good he looked in the preseason last year. He was just a little undersized. Well, then we kind of see the direction the NFL's headed. And that's sort of become the norm, right? And you see some of the offseason testing. And I think, you know, we saw a couple of weeks ago, the Seahawks put up the screenshot of the miles per hour, the GPS measurements. And O'Connell was like third or fourth fastest on the team. Could be just a really interesting dude if his coverage skills are there, because we saw the diagnosing skills and we saw the tackling skills even for a guy at his size. So I've kind of got him right now on that bubble, maybe making the roster. I'm really interested to see how those guys play out. You know, Rattigan, obviously, because he's been there, he's been through the program, he's kind of fought through it, and they really value him on special teams. But he's another guy with like a $3 million tender that isn't guaranteed, you know. Wouldn't surprise me if they do something very similar with him to what they did with Mike Jackson yesterday in getting him to agree to take the tender away and get him to agree to a one-year deal for a lot less money. Also not guaranteed. We get to the cornerback position, which is probably the one that, because of the draft, has changed the most in my eyes, right? How much have we talked over the last couple of months about how they've brought the cornerback group back intact? Well, not so much anymore, because they go out and they draft Nehemiah Pritchett and DJ James, the two teammates from Auburn. I think they're both locks. Now, last year, they started the season on the initial 53-man roster. They had five corners, right? They had six corners and four safeties. I'm splitting it up a little bit more evenly this year I think it was five and five last year is what I'm trying to say. That's, you can see the numbers in parentheses and I haven't adjusted it yet. That's what's going on. Cause I do have six corners making it and five or four safeties. The reason that I'm doing that, and of course, obviously this could change. Like, they were very high on Jonathan Sutherland last year. What if he has a great preseason and stays healthy? Like, he could be a guy that makes a team, right? But I just keep going back to Mike Jackson. And I just, it feels like he's the kind of guy, first of all, size-wise, like, he's bigger than the rest of these guys. He's more physical than all of them, except for Witherspoon, that we know of. I feel like he has some traits that could translate well to safety, and maybe like they did with Kobe Bryant last year, he could become like a Deshaun Shedd sort of hybrid guy. But that he's a guy that I think McDonald's going to like because of his ability to come up and support the run and be physical. I think they're going to find a way. They're going to find a place for him on this roster, which is why I have, you know, the four safeties and the six corners, because I think there's going to be some interchangeability between those two positions. And then how good is life if you're Jason Myers, Michael Dixon, or Chris Stoll, even? Chris Stoll, undrafted free agent at Penn State last year, makes the team as a long snapper. No competition. Job's pretty much guaranteed. Life's got to be good, right? Quarterback, obviously, Smith and Howell. Running back is interesting. We're going to talk to Corbin Smith about this tomorrow. I've got George Helani there because he's considered, you know, the kind of the prize running back signing in undrafted free agency. I think if he didn't have the injury history at Boise State, he's probably a drafted player, but he's a guy the Seahawks have tracked all through the process, had him in for a 30 visit, made him a priority, gave him a little bit more bonus. So he's probably the guy if he's healthy. But I'll tell you, I did some research today and I did get out and find some video on Kobe Lewis and Tamarick Williams. And Williams, especially out of NDSU, is a guy that I think is really intriguing. Can't wait to see him play in the preseason. 6 foot, 227, fits that Seahawks mold. They like their guys a little bit bigger. Very consistent presence for a very good program, right, with the Bison. Over 700 yards rushing the last three seasons. 6.2 yards per carry his senior year, 7.1 yards per carry the year before that. I see really good contact balance, breaks tackles, good stiff arm. He's got good vision. Once he picks the hole, he's got a 4.5 speed at that size. Not bad. He can break a long run if he gets a seam, but he's shifty enough. Just really interesting looking running back and a guy that just screams Seahawks. Honor roll student, got his master's degree at NDSU. I think the running back competition is going to be really interesting this preseason, especially given that, you know, Kenny McIntosh presumably will be healthy and we'll get to finally see him, see what he does. All right. I'm going to take a break here before we get to the other positions and catch up on some comments. Well, let's get to the offensive line because Misfit right off the bat asked about Charles Cross. I think when I look at that offensive line, I think that Cross's development this year and what we get out of him might be, you know, one of the real keys. Obviously, we want to see if Abe Lucas is healthy. But, you know, there are some who say that Cross took a step back last year. I would say this. Toe injuries are really tough, particularly if you're a big dude like that, right? Who has to backpedal and make those movements. I'm not sure that he was ever 100% healthy. Or if he was, just that missed time might have come into play. You know, I think about that Tennessee Titans game in particular when it was at Arden Key or was it Landry that just absolutely beat him off the corner. It just looked like he was slow to get out of his stance. That could be a toe, right? I think that's a key because I think, and if we go back and look at this, when you look at that offensive line, if we kind of go down there for a minute, they keep saying Lucas is going to be healthy. And we saw that report from our friend Whitney, according to a friend. And you know, she was the one that had the grub news and it was accurate through this. I don't know if it was the same friend or not, but she's got some connections that, that Lucas is discouraged with how, not discouraged. I think the way it was worded was he would like for the process to be going faster, but that's just natural, right? But he's really encouraged by it and feels like he's going to be 100%. That's great news. Because if Abe Lucas can be 100% and you have your bookends back that we saw as rookies 2 years ago, that's huge, right? And then you bring Lake and Tomlinson in. He's going to be your left guard if he's healthy. And the guy's a warrior. He's just a workhorse. He's started, you know, 5-6 years straight. I don't think he's missed a game. Christian Haynes, your second round pick, is going to be plugged in at right guard, right? Went back yesterday and decided that I was going to watch the Senior Bowl again. And I only got a quarter into it. It was kind of late at night, fell asleep. But Haynes started at right guard for the North team. It was just everything you want to see. Everything you want to see added to that Seahawks offensive line. He's getting out in front of screens. He's getting to the second level quickly. You know, he's taking care of one guy with one arm, you know, while looking for another guy to block with his other arm. Could not be more excited about Christian Haynes at right guard. And then I've been saying for, you know, the better part of the last year that I think Olu's the guy long-term, and, you know, whether he's going to be an all pro or not, I don't think it matters really. I think he's a long-term, really solid starting center and probably will prove, in my opinion, will prove to be the best center that we've had in quite some time. So you look at those five, and if Cross can show us more of what he did as a rookie and take a step forward, right? And then Lucas is back at right tackle, and you have Olu, Haynes, and Tomlinson, because I was really encouraged at minicamp by reading that they were playing Sataia Lemea at left guard. I think they're going to train him to play both sides. He'll be that ultimate kind of super backup, which is why, you know, last year on the opening 53 man, they only had three guards on the roster. That's why I've got Tomlinson and Haynes and Lemea as the third guy. Anthony Bradford's got an uphill battle to make this team. I'm not so sure that his physical profile fits what they're looking for. I don't think he's athletic enough and a good enough mover to get to the second level. But I think he might have some upside as a guy that might have some trade value, right? Teams are always looking for young offensive linemen with upside. And he might fit better in a gap scheme or a power scheme somewhere with a team that has a need. You know, tackle was tough to kind of pick. Fant obviously was brought in to back up both sides, and he can play some guard too. That's why I felt comfortable in going with three on this roster. And then that fourth tackle is going to get really interesting. I really love the upside of Mike Jarrell out of Finley, the sixth round draft pick. I'd like to think we can stash him on the practice squad, but maybe you can't, because remember Raekwon O'Neal, who they picked up early last year, poached him off the Tampa Bay practice squad. They carried him on the 53 all year because they were afraid of someone taking him. And so it might come down to where, you know, they might keep Jarrell if they don't think he can make it to the practice squad over Forsythe. But I think people are a little too quick to give up on Forsythe. He's proven he can play the left and the right side, and he can play well at times. I'm not so sure that, you know, it doesn't make sense to bring him back again. So that's going to be one to watch. And then Garrett Greenfield's a guy that I think probably will safely be able to make it to the practice squad, but a guy that I really, really love his upside. Didn't know who he was till the combine, but love everything about him, you know, that I've learned since. Wide receiver, I think it's pretty chalky. You know, really the only question, I guess, would be, you know, D'Eskridge and Derek Young, do they have a shot to make the team maybe with their special teams contributions? You know, maybe it comes down to fourth tight end versus a sixth receiver. You know, if Ryan Grubb has the same kind of ideas of how he wants to use Derek Young that Shane Waldron used him at the end of his rookie season, kind of taking him out of the backfield, some of those things, or does that fit Jack Westover's game? Because there's been a lot of talk about him being an H-back type that can play some fullback, work out of the backfield too, and he's got that familiarity with Grubb. So maybe it comes down to, do you keep a fourth tight end, or can a guy like Westover safely get to the practice squad? And do you keep a sixth receiver because of that new kickoff return rule? Right? If you think Eskridge can really be dangerous there, or Derek Young, or even a Aesop Winston Jr., maybe as a little bit of a sleeper. Love Hayden Hatton. I just think his game is so similar to Jake Bobo. Probably tough to carry two. So that's kind of what the depth chart looks like. Give me your thoughts on that. Let's get to comments and questions. Here we go. I got to catch up. Do I think McDonald, I'll just read them blind. Do I think McDonald, this is Hawk fan, Matt Mann. Do you think McDonald mentioned Murphy's weight shape, at least partly to send a message that he's not afraid to call out top players? 100%. Absolutely. I was struck by the piece that Greg Bell wrote yesterday, where he mentioned that, who was the player? I think it was Charles Cross that referred to Mike McDonald as very blunt. That he is direct. He's not afraid to tell you exactly what he feels. And I think that's important. especially for now when you're establishing yourself, right? I mean, as someone who was a manager for a long time, like I always learned that, you know, better to be tough up front, because it's a whole lot harder to back off of that after people get comfortable with you, than to start off trying to be everybody's friend and be liked and then try to get tough, right? I've tried it that way. It didn't work as well. So absolutely. I think that's just kind of who he is. He doesn't, you know, he's been called kind of soft spoken. I think he has a very calm demeanor, but there's an intensity there too. It's just I don't know if you can combine, can you have a calm intensity? Is that possible? I think he's the kind of guy from what I've seen so far that he can be completely blunt with a player about what he expects or what he's seeing from him, but without being condescending or degrading. And I think that's the mark of a great coach. Taste Bud says, howdy boys. There's probably some ladies in here as well. I'm sure we'll get to that. Blue and Green Zone. Let's Blue and Green Zone playing. He's being my, I don't know, I guess my agent, my publicist. Like, subscribe, hit notifications. Let's go, baby. please do. Definitely. If you don't subscribe to the channel, definitely do that. Hit that bell. That was something that I always heard, but I didn't learn about until recently, like how valuable that actually is. So that channels that I follow, if I don't hit that bell button, then I don't get those notifications that they have something new out. I have to wait until it comes up on my feed. Right. Misfit 74 picks up another one that, that I haven't really talked much about. It says, I'm excited for Derek Hall since he's a monster, just needs more time. He's powerful enough to set the edge. I think I do too. Similar to the way I talked about Mike Jackson, I think Derek Hall is going to find or have an opportunity to find a really important role in Mike McDonald's defense because he is so physical. And the thing that jumped out on tape with him when I was watching him for the first time was he was real limited in his pass rush moves, but what he did really well. And that single arm bull rush of his that he can do from either side, saw him do it against Alabama, both those tackles who are now both in the NFL, really, really impressive. And his athletic profile, certainly at his size, really stands out. Just needs to add more tools to the toolbox and learn more moves. But I think he's a guy that you can move around and do things with. It'll be interesting to see what kind of weight he shows up at, because it wouldn't surprise me if they wanted him to bulk up a little bit to maybe play inside a little bit. I think you'd do some cool things with Derek Hall. He is the anti Daryl Taylor, right? Where Taylor's all about quick get off and bend and struggles to set the edge. I think Hall can kind of fill that void. And I would expect if he takes a Boye Mafe type leap in his second year, I think he supplants Taylor. If Taylor makes the team on the depth chart and Taylor becomes just kind of a pass rush specialist, you know, a rotational guy, kind of a sub package guy. Blue and Green Zone. I really want to see Nwosu, Murphy, Reed, Leonard, and Hall up front with the safety or corner like Witherspoon, and then watch everybody go different directions. That's the thing I can't wait to see. Talked about it with the boys from the Seahawkers podcast. If you haven't seen that episode, go check it out. Lot of fun. Love those dudes. They just have such great chemistry. I just wanted to get in on that a little bit, and we had a great conversation. And it was one of the things we talked about is you know, what is it that each of us were excited about seeing the most that first game? And for me, it's playing good defense again. It's getting, and because the impact that will have, not just on their ability to win, that's obvious, right? Makes everything easier on the offense. For all the criticism of Geno Smith the last couple of years and the offense in general and Shane Waldron, like how much help did the defense give them? How much better? There's a stat that off the top of my head, I'm probably going to get it slightly wrong, but it was something like Geno was like top, he was near the top of the league in points per drive, but the Seahawks were near the bottom of the league. They were like 30th in drives per game. And I think they were 32nd in plays per game. So that puts more pressure on the quarterback, right? the margin for error was much, much thinner, because if you went three and out on offense, you knew there's a pretty good chance that the other team was going to go hang seven. And the defense just couldn't stop anyone with any consistency. And I think when that happens, regardless of what it does, you know, as far as impacting the team's ability to win a game on any given Sunday, I have been pretty open about how I thought some intensity in that stadium has been lost. And the reason is because they're not playing good defense. That's where that all started. And if you get that back again, where you're getting after the quarterback, you're stuffing the run, then you're getting after the quarterback, you're getting sacks again, getting teams to jump off sides because you don't know where guys are coming from, right? That place is going to go nuts again. I think that's what they thrive off of. And that's what I can't wait to see is all these things we hear about Mike McDonald and how he runs a defense. But yet throughout that whole process, he's been telling us, I'm not sure exactly how it's going to look here, because I don't know what we do well yet. I can't wait to find out what that is. That's going to be fun to watch. I've told people this. I've had season tickets since 1984. And I used to go to every game religiously. Last couple of years, not so much. Like, I'll wait till the schedule comes out. I'll pick and choose. I'll space them out a little bit. And part of it is just because I can sit at home and watch it and hear all the analysis and dissect it and everything else. And part of it was also my commitment to the show last season, especially, and being able to be in a position to react to show to games immediately afterwards. But part of it too was the intensity in that stadium just wasn't what it used to be. You won't be able to pry those tickets out of my hands this year. You couldn't pay me enough to get rid of them. I'm going to want to be there for every single one of those. And my reaction shows will just be a little bit later. Ben Baller says Mike Jarrell is better than Stone Forsythe. You don't know that. Stone has played pretty well at times. You remember when he was drafted, multiple scouting reports said the dude's ready to be a pass protector today in the NFL. He just struggles a little bit in the run game. I'm not so sure that his profile has changed that much, but he has put some good stretches together. And for a guy that big, he moves pretty well. And we don't know. Mike Jarrell's coming from a very, 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 very low level of competition. And while I like the upside, I was reading some more about him the last couple of days, and ultimately he may end up at guard too. They played him at guard a little bit in rookie minicamp. Now, I'd rather see him be able to handle tackle, because then you can start to get really excited about the future of that line, especially if that knee injury with Lucas is something that's going to be lingering, something chronic. You'd love to think that they found a sixth-round gem in Jarrell, but we'll find out. Let's see. Card Craze, where is Abe Lucas's recovery? We don't know other than what we hear, and that is John Schneider saying he's going to be ready for the start of the season. And then, you know, this word we got the other day that Abe is excited about his prognosis and optimistic about it as well. I think the fact, even though they signed George Fant, I think the fact that in what was called a historically good tackle class, if they really didn't think Abe Lucas was going to be able to come back 100%, don't you think they would have taken one of these guys? Let's recap the draft. As much as they love Byron Murphy, here's who was still on the board as far as potential right tackles go. Troy Fatanu, who we've since come to find out wasn't on their board because of medical reasons. Amarius Mims, who's mostly a right tackle. Jordan Morgan out of Arizona went 25 to the Packers. And Tyler Guyton, who went 29th to the Dallas Cowboys. Couple of right tackles there with tons of upside. If that was that much of a need, and I know best player available, so maybe they would have waited till later to do that anyway. Let's take a look at third round. Who was on the board at tackle when they took Haynes? You know, most of the top tackles were gone by then. Yeah, you got to get down into the fourth round. Javon Foster out of Missouri was a guy they could have had later on. But it did fall off pretty quickly. I think the fact that Fant was the move, I think indicates that they do feel pretty good about Lucas being able to play. Let's see. Taste Buds says, maybe this is an update. Hold on. Wait, did I? Abe eating a calzone as we speak at Quilcita Cafe. Well, there you go. I mean, if your knee hurts, you're not going to be able to eat a calzone, right? It's good that he's out and about. Let's see. And this is interesting. So I love this alternate reality stuff. Let's talk about this for a minute. Misfit 74. If we ended up with JC Latham, I wonder if he'd play left tackle when with Lucas healthy. Speculation, but we need more from Cross. Critical year from him. New system should help. This report that Latham was a guy that was very high on the Seahawks board. And that if the way I read the report wasn't that they would have taken Latham over Murphy at 16. I think Murphy was maybe not number one on their board, but was absolutely the top player available when they were picking at 16. The way I read the report was if Murphy hadn't been there, and up until the morning of the draft, Schneider said that they had some indication that the Bears were going to take Murphy at 9. There was also some thought the Falcons would have taken Murphy at 8, and certainly now there's a bunch of Falcons fans that wish they would have. but that Latham would have been their second choice if he was there at 16. He ends up going to the Titans. But the report also, this was Brady Henderson, I believe, was that they would have drafted Latham to play guard. Okay. And this is, I'm going to take a moment to pat myself on the back here for a moment, because I'd been saying for months that whenever I did mock drafts, a bunch of them on the show or put them out on Twitter, that the way this draft board stacked up this year, that taking the interior offensive lineman early just didn't work as well. As much as I loved Fatanu, as much as I loved Graham Barton, you know, he was my dude, right? The idea of taking Latham and you would have presumably played him at right guard, then look what would have been left, because you still would have to address defensive line. In the third round, after pick 81, here were the defensive linemen that were still left available. Or even edges. But defensive line, another tackle didn't go until the 97th pick, and that was McKinley Jackson, who was one of the few true nose tackles in this draft, and the guy the Seahawks had in for a 30 visit. He went 97th. Does McKinley Jackson have elite upside? I'm not so sure that McKinley Jackson doesn't have more ceiling than Cam Young. That's the kind of player he is, like a rotational, solid, run stuffing interior defensive tackle. That was it for the third round. You go into the fourth round. Justin Aboige from Alabama. He's more of an inside slash outside guy. Brandon Dorlus of Oregon went 109 to the Falcons. You see the drop off, right? But if they hadn't taken Haynes, if Haynes had been taken earlier, and he should have been. Haynes was, by most accounts, a top 50, top 60 player. I still just can't believe we got him at 81. But if they had gone, if Haynes had been gone and they had gotten Murphy at 16, that's what I'm trying to say here. You know who went right behind Haynes? 85 to the Browns, Zach Zinter, who I know y'all love. 86 to the Niners, Dominic Pooney, who was one of my guys, and I would have been ecstatic. I would have been as excited about Pooney at 81 if Haynes was off the board as I am about Haynes. So there's just two that went in the third round after Haynes. So you see how the board just fell better. Mason McCormick went in the fourth round. Another guy that I love. There's so many guards that went after that. That was the deep group in the draft. And so taking the defender early, that's why the Seahawks just got so lucky with all those offensive players that went at the top of the draft. Let's see, where did I leave off? Isaiah Scheel says, why do you feel people have been so negative about this draft? National media was totally fine with it. Seems to be an echo chamber of a few folks who always tell the truth. I haven't seen negativity. I think almost universally, the Byron Murphy pick is one of the most accepted and liked first round Seahawks picks I can remember. Even last year at 5 with Witherspoon, it was very, very polarizing. There were a lot of people who thought taking a corner at 5 was a terrible idea, especially a guy who some thought was going to end up playing some slot. They thought that was a waste of a pick. I haven't seen the negativity. I've seen from the national media, I've seen mostly B's and B's, B pluses. And as is the case sometimes, things that we thought we didn't like on day 3, then, you know, some of these experts, the people who make a living analyzing this, come out and make us feel better about the picks, right? Did you hear EJ Snyder at all on the Seahawkers podcast last week about talk about Tyrese Knight? Like, you feel a lot better about the Tyrese Knight pick after listening to him. I've seen James Pritchett and LaMea show up on a whole bunch of value lists, like of guys that had them rated much higher than they ultimately went, that the three of those players are generally regarded as steals. So I haven't seen the negativity. Jer G says, I would say it's a controlled intensity. I like that. I like that. Let's see what we got here. Jer G also says, I think the gap between the linebacker talent was left after Colson went off the board. Was not really great overall. Knight at 4 was fine. It's only a 4th rounder after all. Really, the only other guy that I would have preferred to Knight was Cedric Gray. But they clearly, as well as they know what's going on around the league and they know the draft board and they know what other teams are thinking and they have those contacts, they had to know that moving down 16 spots in the 4th round like they did was probably going to cost them Cedric Gray, and it did. And that, you know, Knight was a guy, and we've talked about how the Seahawks have done this many, many times over the years, that maybe they thought they had him rated higher than some other teams, but they don't care. He's clearly a guy that McDonald liked, and I think with his track record, we have to give him the benefit of the doubt for now. Ooh, Hawk for life. What do you make of the Rams taking both Florida State defensive linemen together? So, I talked about this. Shut up. NFL Network. See, I hate when the auto videos roll. Just looking at the Rams draft class here. Was talking to Rob Guerrera on the 49ers offseason recap the other day about how much I really like all of the drafts that our division opponents had, but especially the Rams. And in particular, because there's so many guys on their list that I just really, really love. And a lot of them, a lot of crossover. Like guys that Seahawks looked at. We know that Jared Verse came out for a visit. We know that Braden Fisk, they visited with him, right? We know they had Cameron Kitchens out on a 30 visit. And Brennan Jackson was, not just because I'm a Coug, but he was one of my guys that I talked about before the draft that I wanted in the 5th or 6th round. And I would have been comfortable taking him in the 4th all day long. And I hate that he's going to be a Ram now, because I think he's going to be a real legitimate player for them. Yeah, they lose Aaron Donald, but to replace him with those three guys up front, plus Tyler Davis in the 6th round from Clemson, who played at the Senior Bowl, defensive tackle, kind of a nose guy, run stuffer. Like, man, I think the Rams may have made up the ground on the 49ers, because I think that offense with what they did at guard in free agency, and then you add Blake Corum to Kyren Williams. That's if Stafford's healthy next year, like that's a dangerous, dangerous offense. And now that defense is loaded with young talent. And some of the guys they got last year and Kobe Turner, and like that's, we'll see how the secondary shakes out. But the Rams, I'm a little disappointed that they've been able to build this roster back up as quickly as they have, without having first round picks for 6 years. Talk for life. Do I think Christian Haynes will start at right guard? Yes. From day one. Let's see. I saw a comment here about Mike Lombardi, Hawks fan, Matt, man. saw that Mike Lombardi was impressed by our draft, although he mispronounced several of our players' names. They're not easy. I thought I had LaMea down, but I think I butchered it. I think it's Jarrell, but I've said Jarrell a few times. Like, I need to get that down. I'm guilty of that too. And as someone whose last name gets butchered constantly, you'd think that I would be better about that. And I'm going to call myself out on that. I should put a little bit more time into making sure that that I'm getting those names right. Let's see here. Yeah. Let's talk about this idea though. How do you guys feel about, Blue and Green Zone, was Anthony Bradford a right guard or left guard in college? So I think when he played guard, I had this before the draft. I think he played right guard and right tackle mostly, but he had 5 starts, I think, at left tackle. And so he's had experience on the left side of the line. Some guys are one side only type players. So it wouldn't surprise me if we also see Bradford get some work at left guard too. I think they're going to try those guys everywhere. They're still listing LaMea as a tackle on their roster. And so maybe they're going to play him at both, and they still haven't given up on the idea that he could play right tackle. He has the length for it. Let's put this back up again, because I just love this. Let me take this banner away. Think about how bad we thought the offensive line has been for the last, I don't know, pick however many years, right? 5, 6 years. And now look how many options they have and how much competition they've added to this. Like, if Bradford's on the outside looking in, he started 10 games last year, and we liked the pick in the 4th round. There were a lot of experts last year at this time saying, that's one of my favorite picks in the Seahawks draft. Really love the upside there. Think if he improves as a pass blocker, like, he could really be an outstanding guard, and he might not make this roster. You know, they signed Tremaine Antrim, who had earned a starting job with the Rams a couple years ago before he got hurt. And you turn on the tape and he looks like an NFL starting guard. McClendon Curtis was a guy they poached off the Raiders practice squad at the end of the preseason last year. And they carried him on the 53 all year long because he liked him that much and didn't want to let another team get him. And Schneider keeps name dropping him, right? Same thing with Raekwon O'Neal at tackle. They carried him the whole time. Forsyth has started a bunch of games on the right and left side for you. They take Jarrell in the 6th round. Greenfield was a guy that, you know, really stood out. Like, it's remarkable now how many options they have. Like, some of these guys are probably going to want to get to the practice squad, and they might lose them. I just think that's really cool. Let's go back and see what we have here. And I can't wait to see the linebackers play too and see that battle, you know, and see how they use those guys. And obviously, I anticipate that one of the things we're going to be talking about a lot in the preseason is how much are they really showing us? Because, you know, new staff, new scheme, completely new defense and how they deploy it, they're not going to show much in the preseason games. Like, you're going to want to get reps, right? But they're not really going to show their hand. And so, you know, I think this preseason, we're only going to be able to focus on, like, how the players are playing. We're not really going to see what that McDonald's scheme ultimately looks like. So I told you, I teased this. I told you about this, that I had kind of this crazy quarterback idea. And again, this just, you know, I consider everything. I throw everything against the wall, see if it sticks. And I think about every possibility, because I think that's what GMs do. You know, fans sometimes tend to think like this, right? They only see one thing or what they want to see. GMs, at least good GMs, good front offices, have to consider everything. And they want options. And understanding that finding a franchise quarterback is the hardest thing to do in the NFL. And it's also the hardest thing to convince people of. Because if you're not a top 8 quarterback in the league, then, you know, the general public thinks you're trash. You're either elite or you're garbage. And that middle ground isn't allowed. I don't like that mindset. I think there's a bunch of guys in that middle ground you can win with if you put a good team together, or if the offense is built properly for them, the play caller is in sync with them, knows how to get the best of them and stay away from their weaknesses. That's how you've seen. I think the best example of that is look what's happened with Jared Goff. We all thought he was washed and he was a throw in to that trade, and the Rams just wanted to get rid of him, and the Lions were certainly going to draft a guy in the next year or two, and Goff was just going to be a bridge, right? No. Goff showed why he was the first pick in the draft when he was. He just took a different environment and a different situation and took the pressure off a little bit, breath of fresh air. And it just works better for him now, and he's taking a step forward. And so my thought is this: you know, a lot of the conjecture has been, well, look at Geno's cap hit next year. We can't have that. So no matter what happens, he's off the roster next year. They turn it over to Sam Howell and they look for a guy to draft, right? And that does make sense. And that ultimately might end up being what happens. I have been bullish on Geno. I've been critical of him. You know, go back and look at my film breakdown of the Cincinnati game last year. Like, I was not happy. But I recognize the talent and I recognize the upside. And he has ability that a lot of starting quarterbacks in the NFL don't have. And I am also bullish on Ryan Grubb. And I think the skill set, I think what he was able to do with Michael Penix at UW is a hint of what he might be able to do with Geno Smith. And, you know, we keep hearing about how Michael Penix isn't really strong thrown in the middle of the field. Guess who is? So take that and add in that other element with Geno being able to work the middle of the field. I think it's possible that the way that the Seahawks save a bunch of cap space next year isn't by cutting or trading Geno, but extending him. Like a new 3-year type deal. If he goes out and has a really, really good season, you tack a couple years off or you tear the third year up or however you want to do it so you can drop that cap hit way down. He's 2 years younger than Kirk Cousins, who just got $180 million, 100 guaranteed, right? We talk about him. Some people talk about him like he's ancient. He's not. He has a lot of tread on the tires too. But that's not my biggest point. Then my second point is, what about Sam Howell? What about the next quarterback? Because at some point you have to identify the next 10-year quarterback, right? Probably sometime in the next 24 to 36 months. So then what if you also extend Howell? And 2 years from now, if Geno's still riding high and playing well and the Seahawks are contending and everything's working, and then Howell's contract is up, maybe there's not a market for him. And you sign him to kind of a bridge type contract. Like, hey, you're going to be the guy, right? It's the Aaron Rodgers situation all over again, right? You're going to be the guy. It's just not time yet. He's young enough. He'll be 25 at the end of his deal. Maybe there's a market for him and this wouldn't happen, right? And he'll choose to go somewhere in free agency where he has a chance to start. I think the Seahawks wanted to do something like that with Drew Lock. I think if the Giants hadn't have stepped up to $8 million and given him an opportunity to start from day one with Jones being coming off injury, I think the Seahawks weren't just looking. They were open about wanting to bring Drew back. I don't think it was going to be a 1-year deal. Guys, I think it was going to be a 2 or 3 year deal. Keep the cap hit low and try and keep him around so that someday he could be the guy. It's unusual. It's unorthodox. We haven't seen a lot of teams do it. Usually that quarterback wants to go pursue something somewhere else. What if? And then at some point, obviously, if the draft falls your way, and I think next year's draft is going to be one where if you find a guy that you really like, it's going to be a deeper draft. You can talk about maybe it's not going to be as strong at the top, but it's going to be deeper. I think next year might be one of those drafts we haven't seen in a while where you can get a guy in the second round, the third round, the fourth round, right? So just an idea. I know it sounds crazy, but I'm not so sure it doesn't make sense, right? Because the alternative to that would be if you really like Sam Howell, if he comes into camp this year and he does all the things you think he's capable of, He grasps the offense. He looks great in practice. He looks great in the preseason. You start to be convinced that he's the guy, but Geno goes out and plays great. Like, at some point, you're going to want to make that change, but you can't make it if Geno's playing great. Maybe the alternative to that would be every year there are teams that need quarterbacks, and maybe if he's coming off a really good year, some team would want to give you some assets in order to acquire him next year. It's a storyline that's never, ever going to go away until it's settled with a younger guy. Or, no, not even or. Because I would argue that even if Geno goes out and is plays at an all-pro level next year and throws for 4,500 yards and 40 touchdowns and 7 picks, there will still be a segment of this fan base that doesn't believe in him and still wants to hand it over to a younger quarterback. That's just the nature of the game, right? It's just the nature of the league. Let's see. What do we got here? Michael Crowhorse, trust the process. We have confidence in our new OC Grubb. I do too. I can't wait to see what he's one of those dudes that I just love listening to him talk because I feel like I get smarter. I feel like I get smarter and I learn something listening to him talk, and that I didn't feel like that was the case with Shane Waldron. I kind of felt like when Waldron would talk, sometimes it felt like he was sort of trying to figure it out as he went along and he didn't have conviction behind the things he was saying, right? We heard about how he looked at high school tape in between the last two seasons, you know, the last off season he was here, and tried to incorporate some things. It's like, I mean, I'm sure Ryan Grubb does stuff like that too. All good coordinators look for new ideas, but I think he has conviction about what he does, and to the point that he's so confident in it that he can adjust things. And he knows what's going to work based on the personality he has. Dan, is Kobe Bryant going to get more playing time or move to cornerback? Loved his fumbles and was robbed of a few interceptions. I think he's a full-time safety now. I do. Maybe he'll play some nickel, technically corner, right? But I think in McDonald's scheme, that's a safety. Like Kyle Hamilton did it. I think Kobe showed me enough in the preseason last year, especially his ability to come up and hit. Like when they first announced the move, I thought, oh, free safety, you know, corner going to safety, he's a coverage guy. But he showed me some ability in coming up and run support and laying some guys out in the preseason last year. He just needs to stay healthy. It's 2 years in a row now. He's been nicked up with little things here and there, you know. Misfit 74 says Geno next 3 years is fine with me. Like, my thing about that is just, I want good play from the quarterback position. I don't care where it comes from. Like, I don't care. Like, it could be Chevin Cordero. It's not going to be, but it could be. I mean, I like Howell's upside. And it's funny, though, that they went out and they acquired someone who's just as polarizing. Although I guess if he was universally loved or accepted or respected, he wouldn't have been available in trade, right? He'd be the starter and the Redskins would have traded down and picked up a boatload and gone a different direction. So I guess that's always going to be the case. Like I said, if you're not elite, you're not good. That's kind of the modern view of the NFL quarterback. Blue and Green Zone again says, yeah, we got so much depth at safety. Even if two don't play good, we got four more. And I think that's why they didn't take a safety in this draft. I think a lot of people were surprised that we didn't. It wasn't an outstanding safety class, but it was deep and there were some interesting guys, different shapes and sizes. But they didn't take one. And I think it's because they like the guys they have. I mean, I keep dropping Jonathan Sutherland's name too. He was a guy that was getting first team reps at the end of preseason last year. Then he got hurt, right? And they made an injury settlement with him and released him, but then they brought him back and carried him on the practice squad all year. Ty Okada's a guy that got elevated late in the year a couple of times. And then you add Bryant to that mix too, you know, and for all the talk of Rayshon Jenkins and Julian Love, like who is it? Kayvon Wallace? So many new players this year, you guys. It's been a little bit difficult to keep up with at times. Kayvon Wallace, right? I think there is sneaky depth there. And what about the idea of maybe Mike Jackson getting some run at safety or as a hybrid guy? Like until I don't see it, I think we might kind of see it. To wrap things up, I did mention on Twitter that I might talk about some programming things. So got a couple cool things in the works, some simple things, some new graphics, some fresh look and things like that. But as the channel continues to grow and I start to think about the future of it and what I want to do with it, one thing that consistently comes up is sort of in two ways are some issues with YouTube. And one is that, you know, some people just get turned off by the ads. And I understand that, you know, we've gotten a little spoiled over the years. We went away from cable TV and we go to streaming and we don't have ads. And then even though YouTube is free to watch, you know, the ads can be kind of annoying. And I know you can sign up for YouTube Premium. I haven't done that because I don't mind sitting through the ads. And you get rid of the ads. You can do that. But I've kind of wrestled with some ideas of what to do. And I wanted to wait until the subscriber base was enough and the support was strong enough to maybe do this. But let me know what you guys think in the comments. And just, you know, throughout on Twitter, wherever you follow me as well, you know, if you want to take some time to think about it. But how do you guys feel about other formats? And specifically, I'm thinking about potential Patreon option in the future, where I wouldn't move 100% to Patreon. I would never do that. But if I take, I've looked into it enough. I think I can do this. I can take a video that I put on YouTube. It'll be on YouTube. It'll live there forever. You can watch it for free as much as you want to. I can take that same video and move it over to Patreon also, post it there as well. And for a small membership fee or a subscription fee, you can watch all the content ad-free. I'm curious how many people would actually do that, because I know that we're getting hit from all angles now, right? Like I was talking the other day on Twitter about how this whole streaming thing has gotten out of hand. And originally we were also proud to cut the cord because we thought we were going to save a bunch of money because cable costs so much. But now I don't save any money. Like I used to pay $220, $230 a month to Comcast and get all the packages. I probably pay about that now with all my streaming packages, because you have to have all the different services, right? If you want to watch Yellowstone, you have to have Paramount Plus. And if you want to watch the stuff on Apple Plus, and it all adds up to about the same now, right? And then all these other little things, if you subscribe to Substack newsletters, you know, and those things, the $3, $4, $5 a month really adds up. And so I'm certainly sensitive to that as well. And I'm not so sure that the channel's big enough to support a move to or the extra effort and time that it would take for me to also, you know, basically double everything up and produce things for Patreon as well. There's some things I can do with the audio feed as well, with some exclusive content. But I'm just a little bit curious about how many of you would support that. I'm actually going to do a poll on Twitter, so look out for that. I'd be interested in some of your feedback, what you guys do with some of your other content, how other content creators that you like approach that, and what you're willing to do. Also, how much you like the live stuff. I've been doing it more lately, but it's pretty sporadic. But it's something that I do enjoy, because I get to interact with you, and you know, when I'm done, I'm done. The thing about most normal episodes is, you know, it takes me half an hour to record an interview, and then it takes me about 90 minutes to 2 hours to produce it and upload it and get it all ready, so that you know, to present the final product that you guys see. So, interested in all your feedback. Certainly, let me know what you think about those ideas and what your experiences have been, sort of, with some other creators and where you get your other content as well too. So, coming up this week, I got Corbin Smith tomorrow, right? Always love checking in with Corbin. We've really forged a cool relationship over the years, and I consider him a friend and really, really proud of the work he's done. I remember when he was just a guy on Twitter that broke down tape and did all 22 stuff and was kind of at the forefront of that. And then that led him to being a credentialed reporter who gets to, you know, now you hear him asking all the questions at the press conferences and stuff like that. Really, really cool to see. what Corbin's been able to do, and he's a good friend of the show. So get him on because he was at mini camp over the weekend, and get his eyes on view of some of these young guys. And then kind of, you know, what he might see over the next couple of months. And then I'll be continuing with my look at the opponents in the division. If you didn't watch my show with Rob Guerrera, definitely check that out. You know, take a deep dive into looking at what all three of the other division opponents did in the offseason so that we can get to know them as well as we need to, just so we can know what to expect. Jake Ellenbogen, you've seen him on the show before. Great content creator for the Rams. He just moved his entire life and apartment, studio, and everything. And he's just getting settled in, so he'll be on. And then I'm kind of going back and forth with a couple different, trying to find a good Cardinals content creator, and I've had trouble kind of touching base with a couple of guys. But we'll get that done as well. And then I'll have my official 53-man early roster projection. Also talking with Michael Thompson at 12th Man Rising about coming on and doing a, yes, believe it or not, a 2025 mock draft. You know what? I'm going to give you guys a little bonus content before we wrap this up, just for taking the time on a Tuesday night to watch the show. All right, let me find this. Give me just a second because where is it? I had some fun earlier today. If I can't get this up quick enough, I won't have you wait too long because that's not great. Okay. Yep. Found it. Okay. Let's find the other one because this is the one I kind of like. All right. Now let's go screen share. So I did one on PFF, and granted, this is not, I haven't studied these guys yet. These are just players that I kind of know. And they only go three rounds deep. And I kind of went based off of their rankings. But what do you think of this? Okay. Next year is supposed to be an outstanding defensive line and edge group. That's supposed to be the strength of the draft as it looks right now. And JT Tuimoloa was a guy that I expected to come out this year. And I think he would have been right in that mix with Jared Verse and Dallas Turner to be in the top three edges taken in this draft. Could see him being a guy the Seahawks would have considered at 16, actually. Like 6'4", 270, big, strong, edge-setting guy, like a 3-4 defensive end. And also a guy that can get after the quarterback and just has intense all-the-time motor. And then Nazir Stackhouse is another guy that I saw in a lot of mock drafts before he decided he was going back to school. Big interior defensive tackle. Like if Cameron Young doesn't fit or doesn't take a step forward, I could see him as a guy working into that group. Jaron Reed is on the last year of his deal. Jonathan Hankins is on a one-year contract, right? So you have those two guys. And then a quarterback in the third round. Remember what I just said about there might be a guy available in every round this year. Like I almost went Drew Aller out of Penn State in the second round. Got some intel recently from someone who thinks that he would appeal to Schneider because of his size. He's a big dude. He didn't play well in the two biggest games he had last year, but really young guy, big time arm. But in this particular draft, he was snapped up right before Stackhouse. So I went Connor Wegman, a guy that I'm not familiar with, haven't watched. I just know based on things that I've read, a lot of people like him. And I just kind of thought, well, let's do a quarterback in the third round because I think we haven't seen drafts like this in a while where you can get quarterback value. It's either all or nothing at the top of the draft and then a bunch of nothing. And this year was the best example of that. We get six guys in the first 12 or first 13. And then, you know, Rattler doesn't go until the fourth round. So just thought I would throw that one out there and share that one with you just for fun. But we'll get into some seven round stuff as well. Anyway, I think we'll wrap this up. Let me just check comments real quick here. Oh, and someone says, yeah, let's win the Super Bowl and get the 32nd pick. And Misfit 74 says new offensive tackle, if no quarterback. Yeah, that absolutely could be a focus of next year's draft for sure, especially if Lucas doesn't come back 100% healthy. I think tackle would be a major priority going into next year's draft. And I thought someone else said something. I was going to address like why they were at 16. PFF had them at 10, but they let you adjust the draft order. And I thought, I'm not ready to predict a record yet. I think the Seahawks are going to be competitive. And, you know, I think there's a chance that even Brett Coleman, if you saw my show with him last week, and if you haven't, you should check that out. Brett's great. He said he has the Seahawks making the playoffs. He has three NFC West teams making the playoffs. But I thought, okay, let's just put him right smack in the middle like we were this year, just to be a little bit more realistic, right? And see kind of how the draft falls. So that's why you saw it there at 16. Anyway, I think that's going to do it. Thanks so much, you guys. Really, really appreciate the support. Another great month. The channel continues to grow. I love the engagement. And like I said, I have a lot of cool things planned and plan to keep pushing through and still doing, you know, 3-4 shows a week, even during this kind of slower time of the year here in May and June. But training camp's going to be here before we know it. And then this is going to be a lot of fun. This is going to be the most fun training camp and preseason that we've had in years, you know, and I'll do a lot of the same things I did last year. I'll make sure I get out to the mock game and take a bunch of video and show that. I've been hesitant. Another thing I wanted to touch on real quick. I like doing the film breakdowns. I mean, I'm not a coach, right? Like, so I can't get into really, really specific scheme stuff like a lot of other people, but I still enjoy doing it and you guys enjoy watching it and the feedback's great. And it's fun to just like kind of break stuff down and show some of that all 22. I was going to do that with some of our draft picks, but there's been an issue on YouTube lately with some of the companies that own this all 22 video, shutting people down and taking videos down. And even though they're in the wrong and it, what we do with this all 22 college tape is absolutely 100% within the literal definition of fair use. They're still removing these videos. And until that's resolved, I'm not going to do stuff like that. Yet another reason that ultimately, like moving over to something like Patreon for some of that stuff, like bonus content, maybe I guess you could call it. It's a little bit different rules over there because it's subscription based. So just to let you know, I haven't stopped doing that forever. I'm just kind of letting all that stuff settle until we figure out, you know, what we can do and what we can't. So until next time, as I always say, follow me on Twitter at Seahawks Forever. Thank you for watching and viewing the show and listening to the show and supporting me forever and always. Go Hawks. Thanks, you guys.